For WKU Public Radio, I'm Joe Corcoran. As Americans prepare for the tax filing deadline this year, many might be surprised to learn the idea of assessing income taxes in the first place dates back to the Civil War, and several of the other taxes, such as value-added and inheritance taxes, also find their roots in the Civil War period. Dan Modlin has this report.
Today and the next in our series of reports marking the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, we look at the way the federal government turned to taxation to help support the Union war effort. Dr. Jack Thacker is a military historian from Western Kentucky University. He says the Union turned to taxes to help support the war effort early in the Civil War.
Actually, at the beginning of the Civil War, in the Revenue Bill of 1861, which was passed in August, what they passed was the Union passed was a property tax, which was apportioned across all of the states by population. And they hoped to raise $20 million out of it. They only raised 17. This property tax, which was not paid for by individuals, it was paid for by the states. The states then levied it on the individuals. This property tax was not nearly as successful as they thought it would be, but at the end of the war, they attempted to get the South to pay that property tax, which is absolutely ludicrous. But for some reason or another, they actually tried to enforce penalties on them for non-payment.
Dr. Glenn LaFantasy is a professor in the WKU Institute for Civil War Studies.
When it comes to the federal government, a tax is a tax is a tax. And even after you've ravaged a whole section of the country, south of the Mason-Dixon line, south of the Ohio in some respects, it didn't matter. You know, those revenue people were going to collect taxes one way or another, although it proved highly unsuccessful to squeeze any money out of Southerners who had no money for themselves, never mind for taxes.
And Dr. Thacker says the Internal Revenue Service has its roots in the early years of the Civil War.
In 1862, they passed the Revenue Act of 1862, which first of all set up the Bureau of Internal Revenue, which never leaves. It stays, that is the original IRS. This goes back to 1862. And originally, the original income tax was a tax that provided for an $800 exemption, then a 3% tax on the excess. Now, $800 was a very, very high income
yes.
in 1862, because remember, it was in gold.
That would have been, just to interrupt Jack, that $800 adjusted for inflation in 2009 dollars was the best equivalent I could find, was $18,875. So
they don't stop there. They amended. They get rid of the $800 exemption and drop it down to $600 and charge 3% on $600 to $10,000 and then 5% on everything over $10,000. Then that's not enough. So in 1864, they amended a second time, charging 3% on income over $600 a year up to $800 a year, then 5% from $800 to $5,000. 7.5% from $5,000 to $10,000, and 10% over $10,000. Now, that's a huge tax in those days, and it will last from 1863 to 1872. It was sunsetted. Now, they only raised out of that $55 million during the war years from 63 to 65, but in total, they got almost $347 million.
Once the income tax was established, Dr. LaFantasy says the federal government added several other types of taxation.
The root of excise tax as well, and that would be a tax on liquor, other commodities as well. And I read one account in which taxes, whether state or federal, a butcher, in order to slaughter a cow, had to pay a percentage tax on slaughtering.
30 cents
on slaughtering the
one
cow. Yeah, and there was an incredible amount of taxation. There was also some public resistance to this. This level of taxation had never occurred before in American history, what was in the minds of Northerners at this time, as it would have been in the mind of every American North and South, was the difference between direct taxes and indirect taxes. And an excise tax is a direct tax. And all of this terminology going back to the American Revolution, no taxation without representation, no direct taxes, and all this sort of thing, that's what's in the minds of Americans during the Civil War. So this incredibly high level of taxation came as a shock to most Northerners.
Dr. Thacker says inheritance taxes were introduced during the Civil War, along with a number of value-added taxes.
Like a carriage. If you had you paid a tax on the carriage for the raw materials, they were taxed for the manufacturer. Then the manufacturer paid a tax for putting the raw materials together into a carriage. Then the dealer that sold the carriage paid a tax for selling the carriage. Then you who bought the carriage paid a tax because that was deemed a luxury item, and therefore you paid an excise tax on it. And to give you an example, you know, in 1864 and 65, all these other taxes, not other than the income tax, netted about $209 million. So they made a lot of money out of them. And I will say they were pretty modern. On the income tax, they actually had a withholding withholding tax on all government employees and on corporate dividends. They didn't have anything else, but those two they were. And remember this, these are Republicans.
And Jack, correct me if I'm wrong, but those government employees included soldiers.
Absolutely.
Yes, for the withholding.
Dr. LaFantasy says throughout the Civil War, the taxes were presented to the public as being necessary to fund the war effort.
That was the whole impetus behind the taxes, and the fact that bonds at first were not bringing in the revenue that was really needed to support the war effort. But it's interesting that this 1863 version of the tax should last until 1872, well after the war was over, so that for all you cynics out there about the IRS and the way the government works when it comes to taxes, here's a good example of the government maintaining a tax long after the need, the specified need was over. Yet, the United States Supreme Court later upheld the constitutionality of the 1863 and the 1864 federal income taxes. And, of course, we know that it's the 16th Amendment later in 1913 that permanently creates income tax, a so-called progressive income tax in the United States.
This has been the latest in our series of reports marking the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War. Our guests today have been Dr. Glenn LaFantasy of the Institute for Civil War Studies at Western Kentucky University and WKU military historian Dr. Jack Thacker. You are reminded that the tax filing deadline for individual returns this year is April 17th. Reporting for WKU Public Radio, this is Dan Motley.